Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. Just before we jump into the episode this week, I wanted to share a little bit about the Thrive community that I run. It's a place where many like-minded women go to connect and share their experience with getting and staying successfully sober. There are different sections, like the main Thrive community feed, where people post about things that are up and coming or about challenges they're facing, and they get incredible support from other members of the group. It really is a special, special place to be right now. There are also sections to share your milestones, because every win, even the really small ones, are a big thing to celebrate, and we acknowledge that. There are Thrive events, there are the weekly Zoom recordings, so you can go back and see all the weekly Zoom meetings and all the topics that have been covered in those meetings at your own leisure. There's a share sober tips section, and then there are group chats for the first 30 days, the first 100 days, the first year, and over a year. There's a knowledge hub as well, and in the knowledge hub you'll find a place for books and book recommendations. There's a section of how to survive the first 30 days. So if you come in completely brand new to getting sober, you can hit the ground running and find tools and information to get a structure set up for yourself from the outset. There's also my Thrive Sober program. There's a toolkit. There's understanding the brain science and a space to read and learn about all the topics under emotional sobriety, most of which have been written by myself. So come into Thrive. If you're thinking about it or you're lacking community, I would say just jump in and go for it. And maybe we'll see you in there soon. Hello, and welcome to this week's Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today, I'm talking to Marie in Staffordshire, and she's been sober for 576 days. So congratulations, Marie, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So why don't you tell us a bit about yourself so we can get a picture of who you are, what your life setup is, and then we'll go into your story.
Okay, so I'm Marie. I'm a mind, body, mentor. I like to describe myself as that. I'm a meditation instructor. I've been working in the well-being environment since March 2020. I came to it through redundancy, you could say, where I'd worked for a local authority as an education welfare officer for 15 years. I had the opportunity of redundancy, was keen to explore well-being. I thought about retraining as a fitness instructor, but I didn't really have the time to do that. So I thought, well, how else can I get into the well-being that I was so passionate about? And I'd already kind of had a personal meditation practice, and I had the opportunity of training with a company called Exhale. And that was a kind of modern take on meditation, which included modern music, mindful movement, and also the meditation alongside of it. So it was like a perfect expression of me with the modern music and meditation as well. So I trained as an Exhale instructor. Then I then evolved my meditation practice to start up my own well-being brand, which is Unfunk Your Soul. So that's kind of like how I've got into mindfulness and meditation, and then taking it another level as well. I'm also a parent of three. I have a 28-year-old daughter and 16-year-old twins. There is a bit of an age gap between them, where people say, oh, you must be crazy to start again. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect to have any more children after my eldest, and then I was blessed with twins.
Wow.
So it's like kind of how I can bring that kind of mindfulness meditation to more people and using movement and music, because that's such fun, that's kind of fundamental to my kind of journey, what's helped me kind of unpick and move and grow. So I just love my music as well. I think it's really good for tuning out as well as tuning in. I think it's underrated sometimes, really, music is. So background. Yeah.
I agree with that. I think you're right. I think music, movement, meditation, yoga, breath work, they're all probably quite underrated, really. Mm. They're such simple but powerful tools. And
absolutely.
I've never had this kind of person on the show before. And I love well-being, and I'm always thinking, how can I be more into well-being? And I just think that the world is crying out for more focus on well-being and more practitioners. And I don't know about you, but I also love that, like, somatic kind of style, like the nervous system stuff and the vagus nerve and all of that, really, and the trauma, working through trauma and just all of that stuff, really. I think it's a brilliant bubble that's growing.
Definitely. You're talking my kind of love language there, yeah, to be fair. It's just like cases, like, how can we settle our nervous system? And I just realized kind of through my journey, kind of, so when I first started meditating in 2015, my practice then, I started going to a Buddhist meditation center. That's kind of my fundamentals of how I kind of developed my practice. And then from there, I become a bit more confident with my kind of self-led meditation, just breathing, having a kind of breath work practice. But it's how it's developed from there. And I never thought, you know, if you'd asked me 10 years ago, oh, you'll be teaching meditation and leading. I mean, I've done different festivals and led wellbeing sessions at festivals. I would never have thought that that would be something that I would do, because you kind of sometimes... You're limited by your environment and those people that you surround yourself with, aren't you, sometimes, and you can't really see beyond that. And then when you come to kind of book the trend and step a bit out of a bit, some people are a bit woo-woo maybe, don't get me started on crystals, it's that kind of, you're booking the trend, and obviously that kind of ties in with my sober journey as well. It's very alien to those certain family members. It's all growth, it's all expansion. So to me, it's all kind of, it's really positive stance. And like you're saying, if more people took a breath or kind of took that time to get to know themselves and develop that self-awareness, the journey that you can go on is absolutely amazing. And I do believe that we're all limitless. It's just that kind of society places limits on us. And sometimes we do that ourselves as well with our limiting beliefs and things like that. But once you kind of have that empowered take on things, and that, you know, everything that we need is inside, and gaining that confidence is really fundamental to that as well. And I'm hoping that I can help people's journey and facilitate that. But then it's a case of respecting people where they are as well. So that's another lesson that I've learned. So you have to meet people where they are, not where that we'd like them to be. It's all that kind of, like, self-awareness is key to a lot of things.
It is the starting block, isn't it? Self-awareness is the starting block. And I always say in my coaching sessions, when I work with a new client, I am a firm believer that you have everything you need, and that you know everything that you need to do and everything that you want. Just for some reason, you've just tapped out of that, or you've never tapped into it. And, you know, when you think about the frameworks that we're born into, and the environments and the family structure, and essentially we just grow up with our parents' sets of beliefs and behaviors. And it's not about parent bashing, because they were doing the best probably that they could, because they were also born into the same place. But I think when you look at it from that perspective, you do see how limitless we are, that we just need to tune in and be aware of what's going on, learn our own internal language, and then have the confidence and be brave enough to step outside and to do what feels good to us. So yeah, we are definitely on a very similar, a in a similar place, I think. So really looking forward to this conversation and how it's all shaped where you are now. So yeah, with that in mind, why don't you take me back and tell me about your life with alcohol? What did that look like?
Okay. I mean, it's really interesting because when I was looking at the questions, when you kind of sit back and reflect, I wrote a blog piece on it because it was like I was exploring the kind my relationship with alcohol. And I think I've always been surrounded by parents that drank in whatever situation. From a young age, even reflecting back, I think I had my first drink of cider one Christmas. I must have been 6 or 7. I was very, very young, but it was normal. There was always alcohol in the house when I was growing up. And then when I started like teenage years, going out with friends, we'd all club together and get some money. It's back in the days with Mad Dog 2020, that noxious coloured thing. Yeah. Sitting, drinking. And it's because everybody else was doing it. And then we went for a phase where my mum actually ended up running a pub for 5 years, I think it was. So between, from when I was 17, she took over managing a pub. So when you're in a pub, obviously you're surrounded by people that drink and you don't really see or notice other people's drinking because, you know, our front room was the bar in the was the bar. We didn't really sit upstairs in our family lounge. We would sit and socialize downstairs in the pub. And then I realized then when I was kind of exploring alcohol, going out socially, it was very much what other people were drinking. So, I mean, I have a complete sickness. Every time I think of cider, it makes me feel quite queasy. Because I used to just drink what everyone else was. It was Diamond White, Special Red K, all cider. It was just horrid.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of drinking for the sake of it because other people were, not because I really liked it, it just went along with it. And then I realized then when my mum came out of the pub trade after 5 years, didn't realize at the time when she came out of it that she was actually dependent on alcohol because she managed to mask it when you're in a pub. I didn't realize she was up the optics as often as what she was until we've reflected many years later. And then it was that kind of protecting of my mum and kind of perhaps enabling her because she'd send us to different, different off licenses because they got to know her when she was going in. So it was that kind of sense of embarrassment and shame perhaps for her. So then we would go in and buy a drink and not really think much of it, just get her a few bottles of wine. But she was asking numerous people to go and get a few bottles of wine. And then seeing someone in the kind of depths of alcoholism and being the eldest child that I am, I did lots of helping, perhaps enabling, picking up, and everything else. And it was that kind of, from that point of seeing my mum in that kind of vulnerable state, it's then made me quite conscious that I never wanted my own children to see me in such an incapacitated state. So as I've gone on to have my own children, it's been very much, I didn't want them to see me like that because I know what it was like as a child seeing a parent in such a state. That I was there very conscious about how I was trying to turn up for my children. But then I know that with my elder daughter, when she would go to stay with her father, for instance, of a weekend, I'd go out, I'd have a good time. But then I realised that drink was some of the evenings that I'd had. Obviously, my daughter wasn't around. I was able to do what I wanted to. Some of the evenings got quite messy and some of the situations that I got in through drink, it was just, I never really had a drink of choice. I would just go along, like I say, what other people were drinking. And some of the situations that I got into were quite, potentially quite dangerous and left myself open to, was quite vulnerable. So over the years, it's been very much a social kind of element that I would go out and drink. I could have drink in the house and it wouldn't bother me. I would not necessarily drink at all. But if I was going out, you'd have a couple of pre-drinks to get to kind of warm yourself up and then go out. And then I'd be one of those ones that would know when I've had enough But then I'd be like, okay, where are we going next? What are we doing next? I'd be the last. I used to pride myself on being the last one standing. I'd be in the middle of the dance floor. I'd be the last one standing. Okay, where are we going next? And it's that kind of where are we going next that would lead me into situations that could have potentially been a lot more risky. You know, who wants to do the walk of shame at 7 o'clock on a Sunday morning? No. And just things I just like now. And it does kind of, not that it makes me feel like cringy towards that past version of myself, because I had some really good times. And I was quite adventurous in some respects, but then also very silly. But it's that kind of reflection now, and just realizing as I've got older that I don't need to have a drink before I go out. I can still be the life and soul of the party without having to drink copious amounts. I mean, one time it involved a bottle of cheap vodka. I mean, who would take cheap vodka out, like a litre bottle of vodka, and be swigging neat vodka? It's just, yeah. Some of the situations, it's another world. It's another person. It's me, and I've got compassion for my past self, and kind of, I didn't know any better, like you said about parents. They raise you within what they've known, and they're doing the best that they can with what they've been given.
Yeah.
So it's kind of go through that, and like I say, having that kind of compassion towards past versions of yourself, as well as the past of your parents as well, in the midst of that.
Yeah, it's a good energy to get into that, I think, because the shame piece is a really big piece in the drinking community, or the recovery community, or the sober community. And I get contacted a lot about that, about shame, and how do you get past when you think back of those times when you made mistakes or you did silly things or dangerous things? How do you get past it? And yeah, it's a challenging one, isn't it? It's a difficult one. I don't think it always comes straight away, perhaps. I think you have to learn. You have to practice compassion. It's a practice, really, just like most things are, awareness, you know, all the things we opened the conversation with, that they're all just daily practices that become, I think anyway, wired habits. And so that's a good thing. Like now I always have compassion for myself. It's not like I have compassion for myself 70% of the time and 30% I really put myself down. It's like, no, I always have compassion for myself. Now I always cut myself slack because I feel like I spent such a long part of my life putting myself down, beating myself up, feeling bad about things that I was doing. And I've done enough of that in life. You know, I've done enough. Like, I just spent 40 years doing that. And so when I got sober, I really wanted to get more compassionate with myself. I wanted to let go and to learn how to accept things that I'd done under the influence. And I think by learning the education and all the stuff that you do in sobriety as well, and just that focus on well-being and mindset and, you know, trying to build those sorts of tools, it does start to come to you, doesn't it? It does start to, make sense.
Mm.
But what about, so talk to me about, like, how did you get to the point where you were just like, enough is enough, you know? I'm not going to moderate. I'm not going to just have it at weddings. I'm actually going to stop drinking.
That was, like you said, because I did do all of that where I was kind of that mindful drinking and drinking just for my birthday or Mother's Day or just because. And it was that kind of, I got into that mindset that it wasn't just because. So it was Boxing Day 2022. That Christmas, on the Christmas Eve of 2022, I'd gone out for a brunch with my children. Bearing in mind, I hadn't drank for about 6 or 7 months before that. It's Christmas. Let's do that. Let's go and have brunch, which I'd had numerous ones before. And then I was in such... So it was Christmas Eve. I hadn't wrapped any presents. And then I was in bed 8:30 Christmas Eve, and then directing my twins to wrap each other's Christmas presents because I hadn't wrapped them and I couldn't do it. I was just in a really bad state. So then it was that.
Is that because you were drinking Christmas?
Because I drank, yeah. I'd had four glasses of Prosecco at this brunch, and I was just in a a silly, silly mess. Mm. I woke up fine the next day, but it was just that kind of like, it was, yeah, telling them what to do for my bed. It was not, it wasn't, and I don't think it was like we've mentioned about shame. I don't think it was shameful about it. It was just the fact that I was totally incapacitated and couldn't do it. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to, why I'd gone through those episodes of that mindful drinking and kind of, I suppose, abstaining for lengths of time because of that, the impact that it would have. So the lack of sleep, the disrupted sleep, bloated, puffy face, not being able to be motivated. And it came all, it also just came to head. So it was on that, on over that Christmas period, it was like, okay, it's Christmas, let's have a drink. Gone out for the brunch. Like I say, it was absolutely not floored me after four glasses of Prosecco. And then it was the Boxing Day after that Christmas Eve. And I was like, that's it. I'm not going to drink. There's no point. I don't see the point of just having a drink just because we're celebrating, just because of this. Mm. I don't feel I need that kind of excuse or justification. It just wasn't for me. And it was like taking that decision has kind of given, it's made me feel more empowered. And that kind of sense of surety in myself and the journey that I'm on and that kind of realization that alcohol isn't part of that journey anymore. And I don't feel the need or the pull or the need to conform to what everybody else is doing. Mm. It just, and I thought, well, if I've done it for months at a time, what's stopping me from doing it longer? I don't feel the pull or the need to. Like I mentioned before about movement and dance, I love dance, I love music, and I'll go and I'll dance. You know, I've been to sober raves, some of the events that I put on are sober dance events, realizing that it's all about that mind body connection, and alcohol just kind of blurs those lines. It doesn't help you,
messes it up, doesn't it?
It just it's a fakery that we kind of buy into, and it's just that kind of frustration. And it's like, well, I know that I don't need that. I feel good enough about myself to know that alcohol doesn't add anything to it. And I think when I realize that, when I kind of go back to when I have had a drink and that kind of social kind of chatting with friends and stuff, I realized that once I, because when you've had a drink, you know, what do they say? Loose lips sink ships. And I'd be like racking my brain thinking, what have I said to them? Have I shared too much? That kind of paranoia and anxiety the next day after you've been drinking. Whereas now I could just have conversations. And I suppose the only thing now that I'm conscious of is that, like, perimenopausal and brain fog. And like, oh, have I told you that already?
Yeah.
At least I'm aware of what I am saying rather than just kind of like going through the motions and just talking things for the sake of it. Because like, is that kind of more aware of that mind body and sharing what feels comfortable, what, let alone what I feel, no, not about what I feel pushed to share and overshare and things like that sometimes.
Oh God, yes, the oversharing. I've done a lot of oversharing. To be honest, actually, I overshare a lot generally. I really overshare a lot, and I realise that's ADHD, oversharing. But I feel like I overshare within my comfortable limits. Like, I still know I'm oversharing. But God knows what I must have been like when I was drinking. I definitely got into a lot of trouble in relationships for oversharing. Always got caught oversharing stuff that I shouldn't be. So I don't miss that at all. There must as well have been a bit of a conflict for you having moved into the wellbeing industry in 2020. You've had a couple of years, or nearly a couple of years, of well-being and drinking, or, well, from the sounds of it, you've had long stints of not drinking as well as part of that journey. But yeah, that conflict, I see that actually quite a bit when I speak to people in the well-being industry or therapists as well. I speak to a lot of therapists, and they always feel that extra sense of shame that they work in this industry, and therefore they should be, you know, at the front, leading the way on health and wellness and well-being, but yet they're sinking a bottle of wine in the evening, or, you know, did you feel that too?
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because I'm also vegan. I'm one of them. And it's like, and it's not, I try not to get into that kind of like, oh, well, I'm sober and I'm vegan, but that is what I am. That is what I am as well. And I think sometimes I've got shame around that because it sounds like I'm then preaching to everybody that, well, if you want to feel this way, then that means you can't drink, you can't eat meat, you got to do this, you got. And we're already as a society, or especially on women, got these huge expectations that you need to fulfill all of this and juggle all these balls. And if you don't do this, and it's like having that kind of self-acceptance as well. And I think, and I know like some of the wellbeing festivals that I've been to, so you'd be out practicing yoga, breath work, meditation from 7 o'clock in the morning, and then the end of the evening with like live music and drink. And I think for me, as like for the last couple of years when I've done these festivals sober, I struggle with that because you've gone from all this wellness to then like
it's a bit of a contradiction, isn't it?
And it's that, and it's like it's trying to, again, it's coming from the kind of compassionate understanding, but it's difficult. And I think, like I say, when I started my meditation instructor journey in 2020, I was still drinking. And it was that kind of social drinking and that kind of grogginess and being unable to focus.
Yeah.
And like you say, you'd have a drink in the evening, then you go and deliver a meditation session in the morning. It wasn't sitting right with me personally. Yeah. There will be other people that will have a different, you know, they'll have a different thought process. And that, and again, that's their journey. It's not mine. And I know that I can only speak from my own experience. And for me, drinking wasn't helping me move my business forward. It wasn't where I wanted to be. Yeah. And I feel now, I even feel more kind of empowered by that decision because it's definitely right for my journey now and where I want to be and move forward to. And I think that's kind of like reflected in perhaps friendships and the relationships now that I surround myself with. I mean, I don't really go out socially, but that's my own kind of choice. It's not that I would stop me from going out because there's people drinking. I choose which situation to put myself in.
Yeah.
I'm very selective. You know, I also work part-time in a school. So the end of term drinks, I went and then I left after a couple.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, well, but then I was like, some things I'll just say no. It's a blanket no. Because I kind of like, I'm more certain about the things that I will and won't do now. Whereas before, I probably just, like I said, I'd go along with things. Whereas now, I was like, you know what? If it doesn't lift me up, light me up, and it's not a hell yes, then it's not for me.
It's like Marie Kondo, isn't it? Of how you spend your time. You know, does it fill you with joy? No, I completely agree. I am exactly the same. To be honest, I would politely decline an invitation to go to end of year drinks with mums. But that's me today. 10 years ago, I would have been ringleading that situation. Like, come on, let's go. But I think you're right. I think it is empowering learning where you thrive and where you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to have the confidence to say, that's not for me, thanks. Or yes or no. Or, you know, I just think that is, you know, it's another really brilliant side effect of not drinking, especially when you go into this journey full of fear that you're going to lose all your social life, you're going to be really boring, you know, everyone's going to talk about you, and just all of the things that you tell yourself. You don't realize that actually, once you sort of like get through the really long grass of it, you start to see that, oh no, this is really peaceful and lovely over here. And I actually don't really like those sorts of places. I only think I liked them before because there was alcohol there. But I'm the same as you. I hardly go out, and I'm 100% at peace with that. And if I do go out, it's just it's almost a selective dinner with a really close friend or something like that. But that's not that often, to be honest. The stage of life that I'm in now with my young kids, I'm just in, and I do the things I enjoy in the evening. And I think about one day how when they're a bit older, I can go out for nice long walks along the sea with my husband, and that time will come as well. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that contentment where you are in life, for sure. And I do think that so many good things happen when you do get sober. Like, you do start to feel those rewards quite quickly. Like you were saying, you're probably finding that you're firing on all pistons at work, you know, and you're being more creative and you're more open to opportunities that you might have missed before and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, because you're turning up more authentically, and I think that kind of draws the right people in and repels the ones that you don't need to, which is a blessing. Mm-hmm. And it's that, so you can do more of those kind of soul enriching, but also things that, like you're saying, fulfill you, and you feel like you've got that sense of achievement. But it is that empowering sense. You don't need to say yes. You don't need to go along with it. And it doesn't matter if that person, I'm sure they'll find somebody else to go out with. I'm sure, you know, I have one friend especially where she kind of filters her social interaction, says, oh, that's very much something that I would do with Marie. So we went on a track social. That was with a running club. And at the running club, we did like a training session at this athletics track with a live DJ, and there was food afterwards. And she says, that's very much a Marie thing. Whereas other people are more, you know, she's still a friend that drinks, so she'll go out and do some other things with other people, but she kind of filters her interactions with me. And that's me. I'd be, you know, that's very much me, to be fair. And so, I'll drop it. Yeah, we'll go and do that. You know, we've been to a sober rave. Again, like I say, music and fitness is a way, you know, it's the way with me. And if people want to do that, then I'm all for it. But like I say, it's not going to be going to the local pub. And where I live, it's very much a small town, so there's lots of real ale pubs. And on like on a Saturday afternoon, it's just I walk up there to go and do my shopping, and I'm not there, which is good for me. It's good. It's not. I don't miss it. I don't feel like, oh yeah, I really want to go.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think you outgrow it, don't you? Mm. And I think that takes you by surprise as well, because, just the same as you, like there's a lot of places that I would have loved as a drinker. There's a lot of venues, there's a lot of invitations that I would have been dying for as a drinker that I just wouldn't even get now. But I'm all right with that, you know, I'm okay with that, because I think I've just outgrown them, you know, and I'm comfortable with that, like you know, it's personal, isn't it? It's a personal journey. Yeah. So you got to that kind of Christmas time, and you just had that light bulb moment that, from the sounds of it anyway, that enough was enough. And you'd obviously been on this sober curious journey for a bit, kind of on and off with drinking. And I also think as well, you know, for people that are listening that feel very much in that phase, because I think a lot of people kind of get caught a bit, I always kind of link it to being a bit like the sliding doors in a hotel. You know, you're sort of like on one side, you're in the drinking world, and in the hotel, it's sobriety. And people go round and round in those doors sometimes for quite a long time. But I do think there's so much learning and growth that goes with that phase, because it teaches you, I think, what you really don't want anymore. And it's almost like you have to get down and dirty in that bad feeling to really find the strength and the courage to be like, oh, I know this is going to be really hard, but I just don't want this anymore. So tell me about, what did you do to support yourself? Like, what, you know, was there anything different to the times that you'd been sober before? Like, talk to me about that kind of support structure that you put in place for yourself.
Yeah, I think for me, it was that kind of wake up, literally waking up thinking, I just don't want to do this. The thought of keep on, like I say, I'd go for months without having a drink and then have one just because. And I thought the just because kind of it tipped the balance, because I was no longer interested in just because I thought, what am I doing it for? Is it not for me, because I'm not getting any enjoyment out of it? And I think for those early days, I literally just stopped. But it was that kind of mindset. I'm not doing this anymore. I don't want to do it just because. And I think I felt perhaps my journey was bigger than the just because. And I think I keep on coming back to that and having that kind of mindset. And I think I'd seen this analogy a couple of months ago, and it was quite interesting, because I don't know where I seen it. I don't know whether it was yours. I don't know if it was on your page or someone else. And they said, like, your sober journey is like a marathon. Is that when you start the marathon, just because you stop and walk doesn't mean you go back to the start. You carry on until you've finished it. And I do running as well. So when they said that, I was like, yeah, if I'm training, or when I'm running a 10K or a half marathon, just because you stop and walk or tie shoelaces, you don't go back to the start and start again. And they would try and they put that across as like with your sobriety is that it's a journey to a certain point. But along that journey, you could have pitfalls, you could have challenges to overcome, but you're not going to go back. And I think that was like, because I never used to count the days before. Every time I have a drink, I would then, okay, go back to zero.
Yeah.
With that kind of mind, okay, go back to zero, back to zero. And it was like, I only started counting the days from that Boxing Day 2022.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at the point now. And I think in those early days, it was kind of, I kept on having to go back to that. Okay, why am I doing this? And I think I was fine from when I stopped. I didn't really think, I wasn't missing drink or anything. I got 11 months into sobriety, and I was really had a, I started to kind of beat myself up and get into my own head about why I was doing it. It felt like I was punishing myself for something. And it was that kind of like, oh, I can have a drink at any time. I'm choosing not to. Yeah, I felt like it was a bit like a punishment. It was that kind of push-pull. And I was like, why am I wrestling with this? Because I know it's right for me. But that was 11 months in, and it took me by surprise, to be fair. And I think it's because I got over the initial few months, and that was the longest, perhaps it was because it's the longest stint, you could say, that I'd done. And it was kind of having to really pull on my reserves, thinking, what's beneath this for me? Why am I having this real pull, push dilemma, and thinking, what is this all about? And it was, took me a while, and I didn't really unpick it or unpack it. But I just had to come back, thought, okay, and really get into that kind of mindset. This is me now. This is the new me going forward. And this is how I want to turn up in life. And I think when I first logged into the app to track my days, it gave, you could put an initial reason why. Mm-hmm. And my initial reason, what I put in, was about kind of leading a more healthier life, trying to kind of, because in my family we have histories of dementia and Alzheimer's, and that kind of like concern around female health and how we turn up, like the females in my family. And I was very conscious of me wanting to book the trend or do things differently and turn up differently for my family going forwards. And that was very much how I went into it. And then since then, it's that kind of reflection and think, okay, no, this is where I feel empowered. I'm in my most empowered state. And if I can channel more of that kind of positive energy, and that kind of, my kids can see me dealing with, you know, we've had some real shitty situations over the last 18 months as a family. And if my family can see me, as my children can see me taking on these challenges and this kind of difficult situations, talking things through, having open communication, and not thinking, oh, I just need to have a drink to take an edge off. Oh, I'm just this. They can see me dealing with things differently. And I think that's only a positive thing as well. It's like trying to, not necessarily because if they choose to drink, that's their decision, but they know that I've kind of gone through this and have been open to having those kind of difficult conversations and seeing how that can change it. And then they can see a different perspective, because obviously their friends will see their parents' perspective. And like we said, it's that kind of like, we only know what we know. Well, if you can do better or do more, then you can do that consciously, and how you turn up as well. So that's been part of my kind of spurred me on going this next year. And yeah, all the feelings that I had 11 months into my sobriety have kind of diminished now. And I feel more kind of like certain and more centered and grounded in this kind of journey going forward as well.
Yeah, I think that's really, really lovely. It sounds like you'd had that kind of conversation with yourself. You know, it's a bit like when we say to people, oh, write down your whys, and it's like going back to your whys, isn't it? And it's going back, reconnecting with why you're doing that. Because I do think complacency can catch you out so much, especially in the first year or so of sobriety. I think that it can be a killer sometimes, that complacency. But sounds like you found a way through that was really aligned with you, and like that mindfulness and kind of regrouping. And I love that you shared that with your family as well, and that modeling. I think that's brilliant, because it's win-win, right? It helps you, but it also helps certainly your kids to realize, oh, well, actually, you know, mum's struggling with stuff, and you know, mum's talking about it, and oh, and now mum seems like she's come through the other side. Well, what does that tell me in my life when I have challenges, you know? And I think that's just really, it's lovely, it's powerful, it's really powerful. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. And it is. And I think sometimes, like you say, you kind of get caught up in that kind of mindset, you know, when you overhear conversations and you have parents saying, well, you know, I just want my kids to drink with me so they can learn good habits, and you know, they can learn habits of drinking. It's that kind of like, oh, well, I just want them to have so they know their limits. And I'm like, they don't need to learn limits. They just like kind of realize they need to learn there's another way without alcohol. It's just,
I know, isn't it? That whole, just that culture, really, that, yeah. I've even said that myself, though, in my life. Like, oh, you know, when my kids are old enough, you know, I'll be going to be open about that stuff and I'll let them drink indoors. And so, But yeah, definitely 100% align with the fact that, no, I would really like to just, my legacy is to teach my children that they can rely on themselves in life and not go down that route where alcohol fixes their problems or is mandatory to have fun. Because that's sad as well,
yeah.
Right? You can have a lot of fun on your own. And you think, when I look at my kids now, they're 3, 8, and 10, they know how to have fun. You know, they have a lot of joy, natural joy in their lives. They do activities they like. Yeah, of course they have difficulties and ups and downs and they get upset and everything, but they've tapped into that pure joy, you know, like kids do. And I think it's sad that when I think about myself, reflect on my own life, that I got to 14 and then I just switched that off, essentially. And just said, no, actually, the way to joy and fun and connection and all the things is through Diamond White. Oh, what a drink. Awful. Oh, I apologize. I'm sorry if you could hear it sounded like it's really raining really heavily. My window cleaner is here and he's making a lot of noise. Bless him. So, sorry to anybody that's hearing that sound. What about the education piece? Did you do much on that front? Did you listen to podcasts or books or anything?
Not to start with, no. It's only kind of recently where I've started kind of embracing that and doing more of it. I never read any books. I never listened to podcasts. It's been more so, I think once I've settled into my kind of journey, then I've started to kind of branch out and pull on different things or look at it, because I feel perhaps that kind of journey and that kind of getting to that point has been very much a personal one for me to kind of, don't want to say overcome, but for me to become confident and okay, now I'm really embracing it, and then now I'm looking at these different things. Although I feel very, like I say, I'm in a very strong position now, and alcohol doesn't feature and will not feature, so I feel it's only now that I'm starting to do that, which isn't, I don't know whether or not people may do that looking at more so, I don't know, but I felt, because it's been very much my own kind of, like I say, my own personal journey, what I needed to get to a point where I was then felt able to.
Yeah, but that's also lining up with you have everything you need inside and you guided yourself into this place where you trusted your instincts. And I think that's brilliant. I think that I've always been a huge believer there's no one way to get sober. There really isn't. Everybody should do it in a way that feels good for them and that feels right for them. And some people do rely a lot. I did. I relied a lot on the content and, you know, the podcasts and all of that stuff. But I love learning. I have a real thirst for knowledge. And, you know, now I realize ADHD, we love to hyper-focus, and I could go really, really far down a rabbit hole with sobriety, and that really suited me. But not every tool or every bit of guidance suits everybody. And I think it's really nice that we can be open as a community and share ideas, but gravitate to the ones that work the most.
Yeah. And I think, I suppose for myself as well, because I practice meditation and breath work, and I'm very much for taking time in nature and walking. I feel like I had quite quite a full toolkit of things that I could then rely on and that kind of pull. I'm very much from a movement and music. So it was just a case of me then coming back into my practice and that kind of sense of grounding and that sense of surety in self and using those kind of tools and techniques that I've developed over the years to help with that journey as well. And I think if I didn't have those practices in place, perhaps then I may have then lent on different resources. But I feel as though I kind of know how my mind tends to work and that kind of push-pull. I do lots of journaling as well. So because I kind of had those tools in place, I kind of had things wrapped up that I could rely on or go back to and redo different things and find what worked for me. So I think I was quite, luck is the wrong word, established perhaps in what worked for me. And I knew that what I needed, what resources I could tap into as well.
Yeah, that's such a good point, actually. So many of the tools that we learn later in sobriety, you already started with because you were doing that in your daily life. So yeah, that makes perfect sense that would have had a really positive impact on you. What was really difficult for you in this journey, you know, talking about the first few months or up to the first year? And obviously you mentioned around 11 months you had a bit of a emotional kind of wobble and needed to help yourself shift through that, but what else did you find challenging?
Like, I suppose, because in that first year as well, I had like a close friend's wedding, hen party, all those kind of big events. And like I mentioned, like some of those big life challenges that we've had. But again, it was that kind of, I suppose in some respects, being okay with being different to everybody else, booking the trend and being okay with that. And then kind of people respecting it. And I think being surrounded by people that have respected my choice not to drink has helped. I haven't had the kind of peer pressure from people, oh, just have the one. And I think even before when I've been out and I've had whatever glass and it's been in a fan, or if I've had like alcohol-free gin or something, it's in a big fancy glass, and someone pointed out, I thought you weren't drinking. I was like, whoa. Calling me out for having a gin glass. I was like, that's my choice. I don't need you to tell me that, you know, oh, I thought you were, whilst they're having a drink, which is fine. I was like, it's alcohol-free. But then we having to justify that I'm drinking alcohol-free. That doesn't, again, lots of people have lots of things to say, but I'm not necessarily surrounded by people like that. And I think that has helped having people that have just, okay then, so you're not drinking. That they've been okay with it, and that has helped. Like I say, those people that will call you out for having a gin glass, I was just, yeah.
I know it's quite, I think those sorts of moments really show up how annoying the culture is around not drinking, you know. It's,
yeah,
and it really illustrates that quite often it's the drinker's problem, not yours. Like it's their issue, right? Yeah. You're just standing there with a really nice alcohol-free drink in an traditionally alcohol type glass, you know, and it's quite about it, but there's more to worry about in life, people. It sounds like you're a bit of a rebel, which I love. You know, I'm a bit of a rebel as well. I think when I first got sober, because I'd done it before and had already had all of the oversharing, over-explaining conversations with people about why I couldn't do it, and you know, and I'd already kind of done all that, and then went back to drinking, and then had to kind of go back to friends and say, right, that's it, I'm definitely doing it this time. And the reactions of people were a bit, right. And I think I tapped into this kind of self-competition. I thought, you know what, I am going to smash this now. I am going to do it, you know. I really felt like that really took me quite far, because I was very intentional about it. It was, you know, it wasn't a walk in the park, but there were lots of really good moments in my early sobriety. There were also lots of uncomfortable moments and feelings for the first time and all that stuff is a bit weird. But I just felt like I can do this. You know, I can really show myself I can do this. And I just sort of had a deep knowing that I was going to feel amazing if I could do this thing for myself. And again, sorry, I keep dropping in the old ADHD thing, but, you know, I feel like it's a big part of my life now. But especially with the ADHD thing for me, I think I had a tendency, because I always had lots and lots of new projects on the go, and I might flip flop a bit, and I would be literally convincing anyone that would listen to me why this thing would be amazing and it's good. And then like 30 days later, I'm just like, not interested anymore. It's gone. Dopamine's gone. I think that I've got a bit of a reputation with people that like, oh, here she goes again. She's just like, you know, she's on this journey. And so I thought to myself, I can really do this with sobriety. Like, I know I can really master this. And I just sort of knew that if I did it, it would feel great. And then it does feel great, you know?
Yeah. And I think it is that intention behind it, though, isn't it? Once you can kind of settle into that intentional kind of focus, it kind of, I think everything else kind of drifts away. And I think it's that that changes. That's what changed for me anyway, having that kind of intention driven. This is how I want to feel. This is how things are going to be going forward. I think that was the biggest shift for me in coming back to that, definitely.
I agree with that. You know, it was always for me, like, it was never can I, it was always how am I going to do this? Like, what do I need? What tools do I need? But for me, the mindset bit was the crucial part, just knowing that, you know, I can do this, and, you know, I will do this, and it will be difficult, and sort of trying to have quite low expectations around it. And I don't know whether some of that is because when I came onto the sober Instagram community 5 years ago, of course there was sober Instagram, it was a thing, but it was not as big as it is now. And I do think that you can almost get, you can get bombarded with a lot of messaging in the sober community. And I do think it's quite, unfortunately, the downside of social media is you can compare, and you can look at something or read something and think, well, why am I not like that? And I do think that, well, you know, that's a challenge, because that you need to check in with that quite regularly, I think, and just kind of like, put things into a bit of perspective. And I always felt like I drank for 27 years, and I would have conversations with myself, Terry, it's going to take you more than 6 months or 12 months to get over it. You know, I just kind of had that. I felt like I had that, again, another kind of deep knowing, which was really useful.
But then it's quite interesting, like when you're saying, like with social media, because obviously as your social media feed starts to change, so you're like being swayed by the algorithm of social media. Also then like your algorithm with your personal acquaintances starts to change as well. And what I have found, because like I say, I'm interested in the sober dance, like kind of sober dance movement. But saying that though, I will still be selective about those events that I go to, because some feel quite unsettling as the people that... I don't want to sound disparaging to other kind of sober movements, but some feels a bit unsafe for me as being a female, but also perhaps their journey to that point as well.
Mm.
So like part of my, with how I've developed my company on Funk Your Soul, is that I want to put on events that feel safe and inclusive without that kind of edge to them. Like I love, like I used to love raving back in the day, but sometimes if the energy of those kind of sober raves feels a little bit unsafe, and that might just be my perspective, but it's about how we can make inclusive events that I would feel comfortable going to. And I think it's about very much driven by how, if I feel comfortable in an environment and a situation with people, whether that needs to then be all female led, dances rather than mix, then that's probably, that sits a bit more comfortably with me. So just be mindful of that as well, just because sticking a sober label on it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be right for you. It's finding what feels good to you and what feels right for you. Don't just kind of be swayed by it just because it's sober. And I think some people might try these things. Oh yeah, that's for me, because, and you might get there and feel completely out of your depth. Or some things, I'm very much an energy-led person, and if things don't feel right energetically, then it's a no as well. And it's, I suppose it's people finding that for themselves. And I don't know, you know, I don't know how other people's journey will be like towards sobriety, but it's finding things that fit right, that feel right for you, not just because it's labeled sober as well.
Yeah, such a good point, actually. It's something I hadn't really thought about before. And I think maybe a lot of the reason for that is because I've not actually been involved with a lot of sober things. I've just tried to create my life without needing to rely on alcohol. And so I suppose in some ways I've kind of categorized things on a personal level that make sense to me, and environments, and even some friends that maybe don't feel safe to me anymore, or that I'm perhaps not interested in doing the types of activities or things that they want to. But in terms of the sort of sober social scene, I've been invited to talk at an event or two, and that's been lovely. But I had the same thing as you when the wine came out at 5. I was like, this is weird. But other than that, I haven't really been that involved in the sober social scene, you know, going to like parties or meetups or things like that, because whilst, you know, I have been quite extroverted in my life, I actually get a bit of social anxiety at those things. And I don't love small talk that much. And, you know, I even struggle with that at the school gate type thing, you know. So it's sort of like the thought of getting on a train and going to something for 2 or 3 hours and being with a bunch of people that I don't know. The only connection I have is sober connection. Whilst I think it probably works for a lot of people, it's probably not really my vibe. I think if I had that amount of free time that was child-free, I'd either want to spend it with my husband or with a friend paddleboarding somewhere. I don't know. I think maybe it's got to do as well with my life setup, perhaps, and just how busy I feel. Just making time for things, going back to what we were saying earlier, it's making time for the right things and not the things that are going to make you feel, that make you regret booking those things in, sort of thing. Mm. I think it's a really, really good point. I think it also plays really nicely into that whole conversation we're having around have the confidence to listen to what feels right to you and to choose that, and to not feel like you need to do anything to please other people. And, you know, even sometimes when we say like push yourself out of your comfort zone, that doesn't mean you necessarily have to go and do a massive event where you don't really like talking to strangers. It could be like, you know, maybe getting up really early and trying yoga on the beach on your own or something. It could be something solitary. It doesn't have to be something big. So, yeah, really good point. Yeah, love that. What's been the biggest gain then? So talk me through the benefits for you.
Oh, benefits. It's like developing that non-care attitude even more so. I just don't care what people think anymore. Yes. And I don't know whether that's just an age thing or that kind of like, I'm kind of liking it to my kind of sage era, going into that kind of like, they call it like a crooner era, don't they? It's like being an older woman and that kind of wisdom and that kind of, and those kind of insights that you get. Like sometimes I find when I'm having these conversations with people and I'm kind of giving them my advice, I feel like, wow, that's a really grown woman advice that I've given. I'm amazed myself. I'm like, who even am I? And it's that. I was just like, wow, I feel like sometimes I'm really in like flow state and just giving that. I was like, I amaze myself sometimes. And that I'm not trying to be ego, you know, that's nothing to do with ego. That's just kind of that reflection thinking, wow. To be that kind of in tune with what people are saying and that kind of finding the right words at the right time.
Yeah.
It's just been one of the biggest wins. I just feel like kind of really in tune with things, in tune with myself. And like I say, becoming more confident, being able to speak at the right time, not like you say, not oversharing, but it's that kind of like when I feel called to say something, I'll say it. And it just feels more authentic and that kind of more connected to kind of something bigger, like whether that's your mission or how like purposeful living, all of these things that can seem perhaps like buzzwords or buzz kind of things, but to me it feels like it's real life and testimony of the life then that I can achieve, which perhaps, like I say, is worlds apart from what I'm, where I am now is worlds and worlds apart. So my circle has definitely got smaller, but I feel the most content that I've ever felt. I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. If anything, I feel like people are missing out on this because I'm being really selective on who I'm allowing in and who I want to be in as well, because I feel like I say it's very much energetically. But yeah, it's the kind of confident sage era. It's just like,
I love that.
It is. It's like, I find it sometimes it does bowl me over, but like I say, that's not coming from a place of ego. That's just pure like within kind of heart and how that feels as well.
Yeah. I love that. Maybe I'm in my sage era. I think I might steal that. I don't even know what sage era is, but it sounds good. I'm going to be Googling that when I get off
sage.
I
think that's the right word, sage. Like they say croon, it's like you go from maiden something croon. It's like that, which I'm like, croon's a bit like sage, yeah. Wisdom, wise owl.
Croon hasn't got the same ring, has it? No. Have we stayed sage? I like that. I think it's about that deep knowing and getting comfortable in your own skin, being happy there. It's a lovely place to be, to be honest. And again, I think, I don't know about you, can't obviously speak for you, but certainly for me, off the back of many decades of really not feeling great about myself and the drink really fueling a lot of that, because making most of my regrettable mistakes.
But I think that's part of it's part of your kind of healing though, isn't it? And I think a lot of that is, I suppose look through different eyes when I'm, and I think there's a lot of unhealed people in the world.
Yeah.
And in some respects, that's a shame. I feel sorry for that, because ultimately it takes a lot of work to get to this point. It's not easy. I suppose in some respects it's easier to conform to the norm and what everyone else expects, because when you put yourself out there, you are standing aside from the majority, and that can be quite isolating. So if you've got that kind of all-knowing, that sense of purpose within yourself, that alleviates or eases some of that kind of isolation that could occur as well. So it's not an easy route to travel or easy road to walk upon, but if you can and you are willing to and you want to, so you've got to have the want, the will and the desire, haven't you? Then it can be really quite enlightening, but that's a process, and not everyone wants to take that or feels they can. Or there's obviously lots of different, you know, everyone's journey is individual to themselves. And yet some people may not, and that's okay as well. Like I said, you still need to respect people where they are. And that might just be their path, that's the path that they're leading, and ours is different. It doesn't mean one's better than the other. One's just right for that person. Whatever's right for that person is right for that person in that moment in time as well.
Yeah, and I always think it's quite interesting as well when I talk to people that want to get sober or who have got sober, or you know, at least on the sober journey, they all have had that internal feeling that they wanted to change something. They kind of recognized that there was something that wasn't sitting right and that they weren't aligned with where they wanted to be in life. And so I think for those people, this kind of conversation is probably a breath of fresh air, because at the moment, we're living proof that actually, if you do that hard work and you do go against the grain and you do sit with the discomfort and need to build your sober toolbox or emotional toolbox, you will achieve emotional resilience. You will get to a place where you can validate yourself and you don't really care what the people think. It's not the thing that guides you anymore. And you're quite happy to just be who you are. And I think that's ultimate freedom, to be honest. But equally, like, I'm the same as you. It's not about sober is the best way, the only way. Like, some people don't have that driver. They're happy with drinking and they're not feeling those feelings. And for those people, then that's great as well. Like, they don't, you know, it's not for everyone. But for the ones that feel that inner nudge that they want to change and they want to do something about it, it is achievable and it is possible and it will be so much better eventually when you've got through the tall grass. So what are the three things that you would give to people in terms of advice for them to stay stay successfully sober?
Okay, I think one of those is kind of exploring that kind of self-awareness and developing yourself amongst, because so many people lose sight of themselves or were never quite sure of who they were. And if you're able to use different tools to become self-assured, which is kind of like, say, developing that practice of whether it's meditation, breathwork, exercise, developing a habit or a routine of that you can rely on. So whatever that, I don't want to think, okay, exercise. Not exercise isn't for everybody, but if you've got more of a positive outlet that you can utilize, so whether that's, even if that's tap dancing, guitar playing, if you've got an interest that you can then build upon, yeah, do more of that. Preferably if it lights you up and gives you joy, something a joyful pursuit that you can do. Mm. Thinking perhaps there may be to kind of change your algorithm. So your social circles, those kind of difficult situations that you could be placed up in where people, you peer pressure in. Mm. And then also another tip. And for some, it's not for some people just don't want to switch to the alcohol-free alternatives. And it's whether or not you, if you feel comfortable doing that. And I don't know, when you're walking down alcohol aisles to find your alcohol-free, it's not necessarily the best, but it is an alternative that you can use. And switching drinks out as well, if you want to. If you're starting that kind of sober journey and you're just limiting your drinks, switching out for alcohol-free can always be that kind of healthier way, switching one for the other. And a lot of the time people don't even realize, especially if you've got it in a gin glass, they don't even know it's alcohol free.
Until they find out and tell you off.
Yeah. But I suppose it's finding a healthier outlet where there's a positive kind of something. I say positive because it's not about beating people up as well. It's not, you know, like I say, it doesn't have to be exercise. It doesn't have to be anything that costs a lot. It can just be getting out and walking or committing to those early morning that you may have missed before. It's just finding those little things that you can, things that are always already working for you, perhaps just adding a little more to it, a little more depth to it, really.
Yeah, lovely tips. I'm going to ask another question as well, which kind of I can bundle into this tip section. And that is that a lot of people struggle with meditation, right? A lot of people love the idea, me included, of meditation, but feel like they're doing it wrong or they're getting it wrong. What tip would you have for the novice meditator to sort of get into a groove with it?
Start small. Don't feel like you've got to empty your mind, because the first people say, I can't meditate, my mind's too busy. Okay, let's just bring it back to the breath. Can you breathe? Yes. Be more intentional with your breath. And if you can, start on your exhale. That's always a brilliant one. Start on your exhale, but blowing out through your mouth, inhaling through your nose. And if you can do 3 minutes of that breath work, that kind of longer exhale, shorter inhale, and if you can do however many cycles of the breath, always start with your breath. Breathing alone in a repetitive state is meditative. So if you feel like your mind's being distracted, fine, kind of acknowledge your thoughts and then just bring it back to the breath. Stick on a track, 3 minute music track, just do that intentional breath. Again, coming back to that intention.
Yeah.
Just take it with your breath. Start there.
3 minute track. That, I love that idea.
Small.
Yeah.
Small and regular. If you can do, if it's in the morning, or even if you kind of like, okay, set time aside in the morning. I mean, what I have been doing as well, because I'm liking the early mornings, is going into the garden with a cup of tea, for like drinking my cup of tea in the morning, just listening to what's happening around, just kind of breathing, really just focusing on that cup of tea. That gets me started in the day.
I think I feel relaxed listening to that, to be honest. I do love a cup of tea, though. I am a tea girl. Really am a tea girl.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, it's like whatever you drink, whatever you drink of choice, that feels bad saying that.
Tea with whiskey. No, no.
Your morning brew. There you go.
Yes, morning brew. I love that. Really simple. I've already thought of a track that I find really relaxing that I always love, and I repeat it on Spotify.
Perfect.
So I'm going to save that on my Spotify albums as my breathing track. And I'm going to try and do that, because 3 minutes, who can't do 3 minutes, right?
This
part,
is it.
Part of the challenge I have with these new, I'm so good at thinking up a habit, and I'm actually really good at starting habits. I really feel like I'd struggle with consistency, which, you know, which can get annoying.
But if you can, it's always good if you can stack it with something else. So if you can do your breath work with your morning brew in the garden, it's stacking it. And if you're, especially, I mean, if you drink, some people always have the coffee in the morning, or they'll sit there. Even if you're waiting for the kettle to boil in them, it's just these little things. And like I say, people could be put off because they think they've got to, you've got to sit there for an hour in silence. Yeah. And like part of the meditation that I teach, we always do it to music. And it can be your favorite tune, the one that you connect with, the lyrics, or even if it's just an instrumental, if you can bring it shorter, then you can always expand it. But if you could start building up the, building up the basics, the foundations, with that steady 3 minute breath work every day at a certain time, set an alarm, set, you know, whether that, if you can do it twice a day, brilliant. If you can just do it once a day, build it up from there. Because once you start doing that, and do they say it's like 21 days to build up a habit, or is it 56? Okay, there's different numbers.
Do you know what? It could be whatever for me, but I don't think. But I do come back to them. So it's a bit like boomerangs. And that's all right. That's okay. I can come back to them. I love that. I've never even heard before that you could do meditation to music. Isn't that so funny?
Oh, that is how my sessions always have a banging soundtrack.
Because
I'm a rate, you know, I like my dance music, instrumental, stripped back versions of some of the classic dance songs of the 90s.
So you'll laugh at this, right? I don't know where this came from yesterday on the way home from picking up my daughter from nursery. I was like, I need to listen to BBE, 7 days and 1 week. Do you remember that song?
No.
Right, so after this,
okay,
you will 100% know it.
Okay.
Never, this might feature in one of your sessions. BBE, 7 days and 1 week. I used to love that song. I used to go to clubs when I was 19. I used to absolutely love that song. And I listened to it and I just thought, oh my God, I haven't heard this song for so long. It was, amazing.
That song will take you back to a moment of time where you just felt, if you're, you know, in your element, it's just amazing.
It's so, such a good one. You're going to have to let me know if you know the song now.
Yeah.
So talking about your services and, you know, all the things that you do, tell us a bit about where we can find you.
Okay, so you'll find me on Instagram and Facebook. My Instagram handle is Unfunk Your Soul. I also have my own podcast as well, which is Unfunk Your Soul Podcast. They're both on Instagram. You'll find me on LinkedIn, Marie Shaw. YouTube as well, and my podcast episodes are on YouTube. So yeah, my sessions are like I say, modern meditation, music and movement, where I incorporate dance and that kind of free flow movement as well, just to aid that relaxation, but helping with, like you said, about the somatic movement, being more into mind body practices that help unfunk your soul, because we're all on a journey to do that.
Love it. What a great name. Love that business name as well. Oh, thanks so much, Marie. It's been such a lovely chat, really talking my language. Huge congrats on your sober journey so far and your big shift in career and everything that I'm sure you're doing for the world and for the people that you help. And I hope you get more people coming and following you and checking out your what sound like fab services. Thanks for making time for me today.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. I've loved it.
Ah, that's good. And thank you, everyone else. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.